From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, welcome to a super, super duper, very special Pro Football Doc Sports Injury Central podcast. Very special, not because of me, but our special guest, Hall of Famer. Can we say that yet? I mean, it's coming up. I mean, you're elected. Hall of Famer Joe Thomas, first ballot Hall of Famer. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Doc.
Can we say, has your signature changed yet, or do you have to wait till enshrinement day? How does that work?
No, I think from the moment that it got introduced as football Hall of Famer elect back in February around the Super Bowl, you were signing HOF 2023 right away, because it's a little bit like being engaged, only this one is 100% going down the aisle. There's no chance this one gets broke off.
More than engagement. Now, let me ask you this question. Does someone, like, is it just known among athletes, or is there someone part of the Hall of Fame that said, now you have to sign your name, HOF 2023? How does that work?
So typically, actually, most of the Hall of Famers have autograph memorabilia agents, marketing agents, and they're the ones that kind of encourage it, because you actually get paid a little bit extra when you sign Hall of Famer. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Gotcha. Well, look, no one ever instructed me to put MD behind my name and my signature. And quite honestly, I never do it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the official time was. It changed. But I can't tell you the story, Joe. I will not mention the name of the guy. He's actually in the Hall of Fame now. But he wasn't in the Hall of Fame yet. And there were a couple elections. There was a charity event. This is a while back. And it was like athletes that were waiters or something, and then they would sell autographs for the charity, right? All for the charity. So he came around saying, "I'm so." I said, "Look, I'll buy an autograph from you on this ball, but I want you to sign it HOF." And he wasn't HOF yet or elected. He was still, and he actually signed it. And It was all good natured. And I would never throw him under the bus, but that would be a huge no-no. Like, if we would have shown that publicly, he probably would never have been elected, right? I mean, that's not something you want to do. But we were just having fun.
A faux pas. Yeah, definite faux pas. You don't want to do that. You don't want to let the electors and the fans think that you already expect to be a Hall of Famer, because everybody loves when the players are surprised, which 99% of the time they do a great job surprising the players. And I think that's one of the things that makes the Hall of Fame so special.
No, absolutely. And you know, like I said, that's meaningless. I was just joking around on the signature. But in terms of, you know, one thing I would say is that, you know, some people, I believe this, and I definitely want to talk about your streak, right? Everyone asks about your streak. But I really believe the streak has nothing to do with the Hall of Fame. I mean, first 10 seasons as a Pro Bowler, I mean, that's a feat that's Merlin Olsen, Mel Renfro, Barry Sanders, and the original LT, Lawrence Taylor, right? That's rarefied air right there. The streak is kind of a fun afterthought, really. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that once I made my 10th straight Pro Bowl and, got into the likes of the people that you just mentioned, I thought to myself, you know what? I'm not signing HUF on my name just yet, but I feel like my chances are pretty strong when you're hearing the name Mel Renfro and Barry Sanders and Lawrence Taylor amongst the only like six guys that have ever been able to do that in the NFL history. So I felt pretty strong about that. And then getting over 10,000 straight snaps, ending up at 10,363, I felt like when Tony Grozy from the Cleveland Plain Dealer or Cleveland.com now and Mary Kay Cabot were presenting my case on behalf of myself to all the other writers, I felt like that was probably the last thing that they said before the voting happened so that there wasn't going to be any long drawn out discussions about should I make it or should I not.
Well, I think there was no question that you were going to make it in my mind. The only question is sometimes they're a little particular about anointing first ballot Hall of Famers, mm-hmm. right? Yep. And you cleared that hurdle too. So that's pretty special, I would think, as well, first ballot there. So another very cool thing, I think, is who you selected for your presenters. Mm-hmm. Have there been multiple presenters before? I'm not fully aware. I've been to a couple of Hall of Fames and these usually it's just one person. You have your wife and your four kids, the whole family That's right. presenting. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's going to be really special for me because they are obviously such a huge part of my journey through the NFL to the Hall of Fame. But a few years ago, they changed the presenter from doing a live speech to doing a video recorded message. And that was what really opened the door for me to say, hey, I love my wife. I would love her to be my presenter, but I want my kids to be there too. And so when you can do a little video, they came to the house, they did a video of all the kids and then Annie, and then they're going to cut it up to make it a short video presentation. And I think it's going to be really special having all of them up on stage with me in that moment we unveil the bust.
I think that's really cool. And obviously the video does something too, right? It controls the time of the presenter. Doesn't control your time, but it controls the time of the presenter. And so your youngest name is?
Reese, and she's 4.
That's what I thought. So she's never seen you play.
Never. No, she was actually born after I retired. So it's cool being elected to the Hall of Fame because there's going to be a lot of really, really cool stuff around the enshrinement, not only the Hall of Fame game, but the gold jacket dinner and then the enshrinement and my party. And she's going to be making memories of me as a football player that she does not have. They don't exist other than what she sees on TV and reruns and things like that.
Yeah. For me, like, you know, my kids, they're so, I mean, I'm a C-list, whatever, not a D-list, quote, whatever, but you know, some media opportunities, they could care less about anything, you know, this news or comes on this, that, they could care less, but they got really excited because my kids are boy, girl, 10, 10 and 6. Right. So they got really excited when one time I popped up on a YouTube channel feed. That's when they're like, oh, you're dad. Hey, big time YouTube, right? I mean, that's their judge of what it is.
That's right. So I guess I got to get on like some TikTok videos or something, and then my kids will find me rather interesting. And until then, I'm dirt. I'm just the guy that takes away their Nintendo Switches when the time limit is up.
And dad jokes.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Dad, that's not funny. But I'm like, well, your jokes aren't funny either. So kid jokes are just as bad as dad jokes.
Yeah. So we do have a TikTok channel for Sports Injury Central. I don't know. I don't do anything on TikTok though. It's all I can do to stay up with this. So let's talk. And the other good thing about the speech thing, your last, I don't know what time that's going to be, but at least your 4-year-old will be awake in the video.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the cool thing is the Hall of Fame will be during the day now, instead of they used to do it at night. And they've done a good job of being really very much certain about shortening the speeches so that you have to give them the speech. You have to make sure it's, you know, under that 7-minute mark or so. So hopefully the kids are still alert. I think they're going to be awake, but hopefully they're still alert as the last person that's going to be enshrined.
Since you're the last one, you could go over 7 minutes. They can't stop you.
There you go. Yeah, can't stop me now.
Sounds good. Sounds good. So let's talk about your streak. I think what's incredible about the streak, look, take nothing away from Cal Ripken, right? Cal Ripken Jr. That was amazing. That was, you know, a 16 years, I guess, and in whatever. And but the difference I always say is obviously one's baseball and football, right? One is football is not a contact sport. It's a collision sport, right? But to me, it was how the heck did you go 10 plus years, not missing games or whatever, not missing a snap? That boggles my mind that you didn't miss a snap. And at the time I was saying it on Twitter, whether you got a cut on your arm for a second or needed something retaped, but we're going to go right back into the game or who knows, had to go to the bathroom or something. I mean, you know, who knows, an equipment issue, right? I mean, something. Were there times that you were close, or what were close calls? Or I can't imagine 10,363 consecutive snaps. This is not games. You know, Cal Ripken went, I think it was June of 82 to September of 87, playing every inning. But the every inning streak for him was only five years. Mm. Your every snap streak was 10 plus years. How is that? And were there any close calls?
Yeah, it's crazy thinking back and reflecting on like how many series of fortunate events had to happen in order for me to get to year 10, year 11, where I was still going. And like you mentioned, like obviously avoiding the injury is the big thing, but there's so many goofy little things that happen throughout the course of a game. Like you get your foot stepped on and your shoelace breaks. Well, now your shoe's not functioning for a play or two. So you got to go to the sideline, get your backup shoe, get a trainer to tape it up and tie it for you, because usually your hands are taped up like Ninja Turtles. So you can't have the dexterity in your fingers to be able to put your own shoe back on. Or, you know, your chin strap snaps or your face mask gets bent. Like there's so many things that could possibly have happened that I got really fortunate. But I think the luckiest I was I want to say 2012. The last game of the season, we're playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I had some back spasms, so I was trying to stretch my piriformis. So I threw my left ankle up over my knee, and I was really using a lot of force to try to stretch my piriformis and try to keep my back loose. And apparently I was pressing too hard, because I got a grade 2 LCL tear by just pressing down on the inside of my knee. But like, you know, like I came to the side, I talked to the doctors. They said, well, how can you function? I said, well, I just went through that series and it didn't feel great, but I was able to survive. Like I felt stable, and they had me do a few drills in the sideline, and then they kind of left it up to me. Like, hey, do you think you can go? If so, go. If not, like, then we'll take you inside. We'll take x-rays and try to figure it out. And I, at that point, like the streak wasn't in my mind, but I was just like, hey, it's the last game of the season. I might as well be out here for my teammates. Like, I know that I'm the best left tackle we got on this roster, so I need to be out here if I can, even at 70, 80%. So I finished that game, got an MRI the next day, and whoop, lo and behold, you got a grade 2 LCL tear, which would have been 4, 5, 6 weeks had it been something that happened during the season instead of the last game of the year.
And it was your left knee.
Left knee.
Yeah, which might have made it a tiny bit easier, right? Outside leg for you, right? Instead of the inside, but still, that's pretty fantastic. I don't know what's more fantastic, that you played through a grade 2 LCL or that it was self-inflicted, literally.
yeah. Well, that's what the doc crazy. Said. The doc goes, well, nobody's strong enough to tear their own LCL. Like, you need to have the force of lots of humans, like, falling on it or something. And I'm like, no, I was just stretching. And he's like, it's never happened. That's impossible. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I heard a pretty loud pop.
Well, here's what's crazy is, look, I'll buy that you have the strength to do it. Okay. I mean, I'll buy that part, but the strength to do it to yourself. I mean, it starts to hurt before it pops. Right. I mean, like the strength to just do it yourself. I mean, that's to me, what's more incredible about that, whole situation. You know?
Definitely an IQ test, and I failed that part, but I passed the strength test. But it also shows you how much my back was hurting and how I was willing to do anything to get relief from those back spasms that I didn't even notice I was tearing my own LCL.
How about practices? Did you miss any practices, or were you practicing all the way through and everything?
Yeah, I actually practiced pretty much every day when I was younger, but then you know, the injuries just started to pile up towards the second half of my career. I mentioned some back spasms that I had around year five or six, because I had a couple discs that were out and that would kind of get irritated. So I would have to take long stretches of, you know, weeks of practice where I wouldn't practice and I would just play on Sundays. And then I had a bunch of knee scopes and some degenerative joint disease in my knees and my hip. So towards the end of my career, I actually hardly practiced. I would go into the training room and get treatment during practice because I couldn't really stand on my knee because of where the holes in my cartilage were that were really aggravated by standing or even just kneeling. And then I would go and swim, and that's how I got my cardio. That's how I got myself ready for game day.
Interesting. So that's one of the things that I want to bring up with you. Like, the NBA gets crushed for load management, okay? And I get it, right? And part of the reason is the regular season doesn't really matter like the NFL, right? It's 82 games, it's just not the same, right? I mean, but I try and explain to people that load management is in every sport, including the NFL. Whether it's the load management of a Joe Thomas Ironman missing practice to be able to make the game, or in other cases, you know, someone with red zone targets or splitting series and other things, load management happens in the NFL too. It's just not as egregious as the NBA, because you go, oh, well, I bought this ticket to watch Steph Curry. It's the only time he's in town, and he ends up sitting the game, right? And so I get where the NBA gets grief for it, but load management is a reality in every sport. You got to get through, right? That's
I agree. That's the thing in basketball, right? Is they play almost every night. You know, it's not baseball where they do play every night, but in basketball, it's not like they can rest for a week and come back the next Sunday and play. Like, if you take a night off to try to rest up after a doubleheader or two, three, four nights in a row, like, the paying fan that showed up to watch Steph Curry or LeBron James is going to be upset. However, like, they don't really have any other time to get that rest when they need it. And unless the regular season was shorter where every game really mattered, it's a lot better to have LeBron James feeling good in the playoffs than it is for some meaningless road game during the regular season. So as much as fans get upset about it, and I understand, like, they paid to watch the star and they showed up for that. But, like, I can't expect the star or the team to say, yeah, it's more important for us to just have them out there every night than it is to try to win a championship. And I think the difference is now pro sports is being played on such a high level because of the constant evolution of the game that it's a lot harder to be at your absolute best every single play, every single game, every single night. And I think it's a lot more difficult than it was maybe 30 years ago, because when you look at the nutrition, you look at the training, you look at the way that these guys are getting themselves in peak physical and mental condition, like, the game's a lot harder to be absolutely at your best every single night than it used to be. And so it was probably a lot easier when, you know, Jordan played in the 80s and 90s to be a little bit less than your best, and nobody really notices, right? Because your difference in how good you are versus all of your opponents is so great that nobody really notices you're going to drop 28 instead of 34, and you're technically, you know, taking your foot off the gas a little bit, whereas you can't really do that in today's professional sports.
Well, you bring up a lot of good points there. And the first one that you just, or the last one you just made there, like, people see right now that's preseason, right? Or it's preseason starting, and people see a couple of videos of Breece Hall running in practice and like, oh, he's great, he's back. Like, that's not even close to like the level of how special right. these guys are, right? He's doing great and he's getting there. But you look at that, it's like, it's, you know, I see offensive linemen take a half or three quarter speed rep. Oh, he's ready to go. No, the game is so difficult there. So that's one thing. The other thing that you touched on, you're right, I can't do the math for 17 games. So let's go back to 16 games. 16 games in the NFL, 82 in the NBA, or 81 in the NBA, 162 in Major League Baseball. Each NFL game is worth five NBA games and 10 Major League Baseball games. So I'm in San Diego and everyone's distraught because the Padres lost three in a row. They didn't get swept. They won one game against the Phillies. But imagine, here's the closest thing I could say. I remember it was in 1999 and the Chargers were terrible. We were 0-13. Okay. We were terrible. And in week 14, we beat Kansas City. And this is well before their current run, but we beat Kansas City. And we felt pretty good about ourselves in the building that week because that was like our having a 10-game baseball winning streak. If you lose three straight series, get swept three straight series in a row in baseball, you're having clubhouse meetings. You lose 20, you get swept six straight series in baseball, and the manager's fired, right? But in the NFL, the vast majority of teams will undergo a two-game losing streak in a given season, even if you're a winning team. So it's just so different. And this is why injections to play and so forth. Did you take injections to play?
At times, like my last season in the NFL, I was mentioning that I had a really bad left knee, a lot of degenerative joint disease, arthritis.
That LCL so I would, came back to get you.
Yeah, right. I wish. No, I'd actually tore meniscus when I was a sophomore in college on the lateral side in that knee. And then just because of the way a left tackle kind of tucks up that left leg and left knee underneath himself and then kind of slams that knee into the ground or that foot into the ground over and over again, it just the meniscus tear from when I was 19 and then that beating that took on that little spot on my knee, just by the time I was 34, like there was just not much left and it was really irritating the joint. And so on Mondays I would get it drained. And then on Friday I would get like a Euflexa or like the hyaluronic acid shot. And then once every couple months, I can't remember, I would get a cortisone shot in there. And then oral pain medicine to try to help, get yourself ready and be able to go out there on Sunday. But that was one of the things that actually made retirement easy when I made that decision, was that process of getting yourself ready for every Sunday, not the football stuff, not like practices and the meetings, but just physically going through the draining the knee and the injections and not being able to walk and having to basically scoot on your butt to get down the stairs and like dragging your leg down the hall for 16 weeks. And then also questioning in your mind, like, is this the week it's not going to respond? Like, is our process that we have getting ready for game day just not going to work? And then what's going to happen? Then I'm going to have to just not even go out there because I can't do it. So I think that really mentally more than anything sort of started catching up to me by year 11 to the point where I was almost relieved that I didn't have to go through that anymore because of how miserable it had become in my head.
Yeah, no question. So in my time, there was lots of, and it was a different era too, lots of painkilling injections. We actually didn't reuse very many oral pain pills. Sure, Toradol, things like that. But narcotics, people, like this whole NFL team doctors drug people up to play like narcotics and Vicodin and Brentford. It wasn't my experience because it slows your reaction time. You can't play on that stuff, the speed and precision game that you play. Local numbing injections were more of what we did than than that, but with your knee, that's hard to do. Hard to do.
Yeah, well, it was tricky, but to your point, like you said, like I would take 15 milligrams of Vicodin during the game, so I'd take 10 during warmups, and then I'd take 5 at halftime. But I was having more pain than that would even block out, and so I tried to take a little bit more one game, and I found myself just getting sleepy on the sideline to the point where I was on the bench, like I was feeling really tired, and not physically, but just like I wanted to fall asleep. And then that's kind of when I realized like there's a limit to the effectiveness of this stuff, where like if it's not knocking off the pain, now you're significantly hampering your physical abilities because it does slow reaction time. It does make you sleepy. And there's a huge diminishing amount of return when you start taking those oral pain meds.
Well, you mentioned your knee, and I want to tie two subjects and a question together. I've often told players have come to me and said, "Doc, what's the best thing for my knee?" And you've described your knee in the wear and tear and the arthritis. My answer would be lose 100 pounds and quit playing football. And of course they would come back and say, no, I can't do that. I meant with playing football, right? And so is your weight, look, very few players, especially offensive linemen, in my experience, when they're done, weigh the same. They either lose because they were always trying to put weight on, or they're trying to lose for their health, or they gain because they don't have the exercise anymore to burn it. Where did you fall on this with your weight loss? You've done great. You look great.
Thanks. Yeah, I was always the type of player that needed to gain weight to be able to play on the offensive line. And, you know, of course, it gets easier as you get a little bit older. But when I went from 305, 300 when I retired to 280, 275, like that first 20, 25 pounds was easy. And my wife laughs and I'm like, well, hey, instead of having three sandwiches for lunch, I had two and a bag of chips and I lost 25 pounds. What a diet. It was like the Subway diet. Yeah, I ate three Subway sandwiches and a bag of Doritos and I lost 30 pounds. Well, your body, just because of how huge it was probably burning 5,000 calories a day just at rest without even working out. But the second 25 or so that I lost, I had to be a little bit more targeted. I really had to pay attention and be mindful of what I was eating, not just the volume, but actually the type of macronutrients that was going in my body. But I was highly motivated because our team doctor said the same thing that you just said. He said, if you want your knee to feel better now and in the future, stop playing football, obviously. Okay, check. And lose weight, because 1 pound on your body is like 3 pounds going through your joints. And so cleaning up my diet, because I was eating terrible things to keep the weight on, like ice cream and Girl Scout cookies every night, all the carbs and sugar you could possibly imagine, because I needed the calories and I needed that energy to be able to go out and play at 300 plus pounds. But cleaning up the diet made a big impact on just general inflammation in my body. But then losing that weight made it so much more comfortable living at 250 than it was at 300 pounds.
Yeah. And I'd say every pound of weight translates to at least 5 to 10 pounds of force across your joints and more when you're running and jumping and doing other things. So there's no question that's a big effect. So are you still a Browns fan, or you root for the Browns, or you're just attached? I know you're sort of with the team and so forth. How are the Browns going to do this year? What's your thought?
Yeah, I'm a big Browns fan. I'm raising my kids as Browns fans. Three of my kids were born in Cleveland. One was born in Wisconsin, but yeah, I still love the team. And, you know, for a guy that played there 11 years and never made the playoffs, you could easily say, oh, how can you still be a fan? But I fell so much in love with the organization, with the people that work there, with the city, the fans. Like, it just became a part of who I was, a big part of my identity. And so I'm a huge Browns fan. And I think they're going to have a good season. I think last year was tough. They've got a lot of talent. They struggled a little bit on defense. Deshaun Watson was suspended 2/3 of the season. And so he came back and he was rusty and he didn't look good within that offense because he just didn't have the experience. But I think having a full season, a full offseason under his belt, working with Kevin Stefanski, who's the head coach, and then they brought in Jim Schwartz to be the defensive coordinator, a very well-known and respected defensive coordinator throughout the NFL. I think he's going to really get the most out of Myles Garrett. They signed Dalvin Tomlinson, who's a terrific pass and run defender at the defensive tackle position from the Minnesota Vikings. So I think this is probably the most talented roster that they've had in a very long time. And I think they have the right coaching staff in place to get the most out of those players.
Well, that's great news for me, because in my Scott Fish Bowl 13 draft still going on, the Fanta division, and in the first round, I drafted 10th. I couldn't pass up on CMC, right? And that's first round. And then on the quick turn of the second round, you need a quarterback, and they were mostly fished out. So I went with Deshaun Watson, counting on a bounce back season. So hopefully that will be the case.
Yes, sir.
So Joe, you're everywhere, NFL Network, other things. Anything else you want to talk about or plug anything? You don't care. Of course, you got a busy 2 weeks coming up. And by the way, yes, I keep checking my mail every day, Joe. You know, I don't see the invite
yet. It'll be there any day now.
Okay, yeah. Hold your breath. Yeah, I got it.
Hold your breath. So, yeah, 2 weeks. Almost. Yeah, 2.5 weeks will be the enshrinement in Canton. That's obviously a big one. And me personally, it's been a lot of fun getting involved in a lot of different entities in retirement, food, football, family. Those are all things that I have a lot of passion in. So I've got a bunch of youth performance gyms in Wisconsin called Sports Advantage, where we train grade schoolers, middle schoolers, and high schoolers just how to move, how to be better athletes. It's not sports specific. It's just keeping them injury free and creating a better athlete. I've got a cattle ranch in Wisconsin where we sell Hall of Fame beef, the finest beef that money can buy. Mission Barbecues, a bunch of barbecue restaurants that I've got throughout the Midwest and Eastern United States. So a lot of good stuff going on over here.
Well, if the holiday invite doesn't come, I like barbecue. No, just kidding. All good there. All good stuff. And it sounds like you got more going on in life now than even when you're playing. And congrats to you. You're obviously a guy who'd be, and from the first time I met you, very successful in anything you do in life, and not just football, right? Putting your mind to it. And you're showing that. Congratulations on being the first ballot Hall of Famer and taking time out of your busy schedule. You know what the Hall, have you ever been to the Hall of Fame? You've never, because you've always been in training camp, so you've never been. I think you're fine. It's really special. I'm sure you've seen the schedule and everything, not just the enshrinement, but you know, I think the dinner is cool where you march through all the different rooms or people, right? In the intro and the jacket ceremony, all of it's really cool. I hope you and your family really enjoy that. And thank you for taking the time to come on here with us. Always wanted to chat with you. You know, we're at Injury Website, Sports Injury Central, SICScore.com. And here's the goat of anti-injury, staying away from it until that unfortunate triceps tear. But congratulations again, and thank you for joining us.
Awesome. I appreciate you having me on, Doc.
All right. Thanks, buddy. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back with the second half of the Pro Football Doc podcast. All right. Welcome back to part two of the Pro Football Doc Sports Injury Central podcast, or as we should call this, the HOF 2023 podcast. Joe Thomas, nice guy. I'm not even sure where I met Joe. It might have been at a Super Bowl, something started changing. He's just a nice guy, as you can tell. Very easygoing, the whole deal. And that's crazy that he tore his own LCL. I mean, I've always said I'd be a very, very poor heroin junkie. I don't think I could stick myself to do that, to push that hard. Yeah. Like I said, I think he's strong enough, but then you start to feel pain and don't you stop? I mean, he just kept pushing. That's pretty incredible.
You're no stranger to back pain too. So he's making the point that he's trying to get rid of that back spasm. So I guess, but I've never had my back hurt enough to tear my knee. So,
I haven't either. I've had 3 back surgeries and a neck surgery, right, and I've not come close to tearing up my knee myself, except sometimes, you know, bending over to pick up a baseball recently, I might have torn something.
it's always when you're not trying to do anything athletic that your knees are most at risk. I think you made a good point though. I don't think we talk enough about the day-to-day stuff that the players go through to get in the physical shape to go out there and play every week. I mean, I know it gets gamified for fantasy sports, like, oh, come on, play through that ankle, but just hearing what he had to do every week in that routine to get play through his knee arthritis and stuff. I mean, and that's just the O-line. You don't think about O-line, you think about position players. So
no question.
Everyone all the field.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When I first, I don't know if I ever told this story on the podcast, but when I first was with the Chargers, I spent time in Chicago and Minnesota, but first with the Chargers, Natron Means was the man, the running back. And I was shocked. On Mondays, the guy could barely walk. I mean, and then come next Sunday, we'd ready to go. And that's when I started thinking about things like, you know, you say, oh, this guy's a big running back. Okay. But here's you got to understand. Let's say a running back gets 20 carries. How many hits does he take? You know, 16, 18,
yeah, 12 to 15, I was saying, but yeah,
12, 15, but
that's generous.
But on some plays, more than one person.
Right.
And here's the key. Let's just say it's 20 plays and 16 times you're hit. by 8 different players. So you're, even if you're delivering blows instead of receiving blows, it's still contact. So forget the blocking side, but there's contact, big time contact, 16 plays from 8 different people. You get what I mean? So there's where it, you know, and of course, Joe Thomas is the defender there, because he's sitting back typically. That's why they like to run block. They can be the aggressor. But one thing I forgot to mention during the interview is I don't think it's an accident that Joe Thomas wasn't injured. Sure, there was a mindset and he was going to play and the whole deal. And I do think it's amazing that a chin strap didn't break or something. That happens all the time, right? Just one play. So the number of plays are amazing. But I've often said it here. The better player gets hurt more often. And this goes into cluster injuries. The offensive lineman that's holding on for dear life with his legs and feet planted get rolled up on. The dominant ones who keep their feet moving escape that type of injury. And so this is where you get into the cluster injuries, changing positions, but players that aren't, quote, starters, they may get the job done, but sometimes you're hanging on. Think of it this way. If you're in a tug of war, I get it's different motion than football. What's the winning team doing? Churning its legs. What's the losing team doing? Hunkering down into the sand. Yeah. Don't go anywhere, right? That's the same thing. And so that's also has to do with his athleticism is what allowed him to stay injury-free to some extent as well, because he was the dominant player and he was better, so he could keep his feet moving, et cetera. But I did stay away from telling a story about, because I didn't want to, like, what he did was amazing. But we did have, in my time, should I say the name? Yeah, he doesn't care. I probably have talked about it. He's a friend. He comes over all the time. Vaughn Parker, right tackle for the Chargers back in the day, and Washington and whatever. But the game against the Rams, he tore his triceps. Finished the series, comes off the sideline, like, take a look. He's like, he's got nothing. He can't push. I'm like, oh, you tore your triceps. He's like, well, what do we do? I said, do you think you can play? He goes, I finished the series. I don't know. I mean, so we put a brace on him with a locked hinge so the elbow would stay stiff so he could, you know, use the hole, but obviously not the same thing. He finished the game. Then after the game, I said, look, you need surgery. It's still fairly early season. And this is back in the day. There was no six-game IL, six-game injured list, right. You know, injured reserve, et cetera, and then come back. It was either out for the season or not. And he's like, I don't want to be done for the season. But the team's like, we can't carry the guy for, you know, whatever. And so we came up with a plan, and we said, you got to have surgery. You can't wait till the end of the season. So let's do the surgery. And when you feel good, we'll put you back into the same brace. And so you're a low risk of harming it, but you're weaker. You can't really push, but, you know, play the same way. So he had surgery, missed a game, and came back in 2 weeks. And the conversation was the GM was fine with the idea. Our head coach was fine with the idea. And I remember our O-line coach said, are you effing kidding me? I can't have a guy out there playing with one arm.
With the chicken wing kind of.
With the chicken wing kind of thing. And so I was like, yeah, it's your choice. I'm just telling you what can happen here.
Right.
And he goes, so I said, how did he play this last game? He goes, he graded out pretty well. I said, did you know the injury happened in the first quarter? And he was like, oh. So he did come back and we did do that. But in all fairness, Vaughn said to me, I said, what would happen if someone knew about this? He goes, I'd be toast. There's no way I could hold a bull rush off with that arm or hand. But, you know, you just veteran guile, his widen his split a little bit, invited him to go inside. And his first step would be a little more to the outside to try and be more protective. And, you know, it's sort of invite the guy to come the other way, and you know, veteran guile, he made it through, but it still would have broken Joe Thomas's streak, right? I mean, because he did miss a little bit of time there, but Anyways, I still think it's fantastic as much as Cal Ripken Jr.
Right.
I mean, one little equipment issue, cleat, a shoelace, this, that, the other, anything.
There was a couple of seasons where Cal Ripken, he didn't play nine innings every game. It was all he got lifted for a pinch hitter in the eighth or whatever it was. Or
yeah. It's still great because baseball is again and again and daily, day in, day out kind of thing. And if you want to say day in, day out, Cal Ripken, quote, has Joe Thomas speak because he admits that he didn't practice all that much depending on what was happening during the later part of his career. But Cal Ripken was, I think, five and the change years of every inning. And then not that he took time off, but like, you know, the every play streak is every snap is pretty crazy to me.
I'm trying to think of position group wise, if there's a group that's more likely to play through an issue. Like, seems like O-line, there's usually a big drop off between like, oh, we don't really have a guy who can play left tackle. We have a right tackle who can swing and fill in every bit. But if you could play through, we'd want you to play through, versus running back, there's usually a contingency plan, or wide receiver, you can slot a guy in.
Well, there's no question that, you know, D-line always has a rotation, and there's pass rush specialist and run stop specialist and just a general rotation. A lot of teams do, you know, first string, second string, or two double rotations. You don't see that in the offensive line, right? I mean, there are no three down running back. Well, not very many three down running backs anymore. And even wide receivers don't necessarily play every snap. And even linebackers don't always. Safeties mostly do, but even then, yeah, it's very dependent. But O-line, it's still, you play every down and it's your unit. And the other thing about that is, depending on the roster manipulation, it's not uncommon to go seven deep for your active roster. So you're two injuries down to scraping the bottom of the barrel, and a third one, and it's the tight end or whoever is coming in, right? I mean, it's just the way that it is. So that's, you're right. You don't have a true backup at every spot. You've got one guy covering two or three spots and the other guy covering the other two or three. Sometimes it's a luxury to have eight offensive linemen up.
Right. Well, going through our preseason injury preview, coming and familiarizing with where guys are now in the offseason stuff. I know it's still a couple balls to drop, but seeing Bud Dupree on the Falcons as listed as their starting outside linebacker, I was like, that there's no way he's starting outside linebacker every snap with that knee. And his advanced age at this point, so there's got to be some kind of rotation going on.
I don't know, and we'll see. I will take another look at Bud Dupree and you know, offensive line, defensive rotations. I simply panned Bud Dupree when he got signed with the Titans because he was coming off an ACL and got the contract. He actually rounded out. I mean, yes, he's got some, I think, degenerative knees, but he played late season pretty well, I think. So we'll see. But you're right, he probably isn't in every down at this point in time, but I think he should have more of a bounce back season than he had last season, because he's going to be healthier for a bulk of it, at least, you know, not in his first time in Tennessee there where he missed some time and when he was first signed, et cetera. But your preseason injury preview, what's the full release next week? Right now you have some piecemeal releases.
Yeah, right before training camp. Training camp opens on the 25th for veterans, so we're aiming to have it out on the 24th, which is next Monday. So We got bits and pieces. We've released some teams last week, and now we're doing the fantasy components, which is a good segue. I wanted to ask you about one of them. Our four players to avoid. Some are pretty straightforward. Breece Hall, Javonte Williams, we've talked about on the podcast before. Kyle Pitts is kind of an interesting one just because we're waiting to evaluate fully what the extent of his knee injury was, because the video was pretty discouraging when we saw it first, and then the team tried to say it was just a torn MCL, which usually don't require surgery. But a healthy player coming in this year that we're not too high on because of the quarterback thrown to him is Cooper Kupp. I mean, Cooper Kupp's being drafted as the wide receiver three. He's usually going mid to late first round for most drafts, but why are we avoiding him at his ADP?
Well, Kyle Pitts is, like, our suspicion is it's more than an MCL,
right?
And the length of time and the need for surgery. And if it's more than an MCL, whether it involves the ACL or the PCL, we knew that video did not look good. And if that's the case, it's a multi-ligament. That's why we're down on Kyle Pitts. You know, we talked about Breece Hall in previous weeks, not loving him, certainly early season. Javonte Williams with multi-ligament. Cooper Kupp, I'm not worried about his ankle. I think he's healthy. obviously he recovered well from his ACL a few years ago. To me, it's about the health of Matt Stafford and their offensive line and how that translates to Cooper Kupp. Matt Stafford is the worry with his spinal cord contusion last year. No surgery, so there's risk of a contusion again. I'm not saying Matt Stafford will be paralyzed if he takes another hit. I'm not saying that. The Rams wouldn't do that to him. And his wife wouldn't let that happen, right? I mean, she's all about protecting him. But if he gets another spinal cord contusion, he's done for the season and then maybe career. Then what happens to Cooper Kupp and his numbers and the offensive line? And the
it's surprising to see Rams make a late playoff push too, given their situation. So,
yeah, so that's why I think be careful on Cooper Kupp. Stetson Bennett, who is the other quarterback on the roster? I don't know. That's what would potentially hurt.
Maybe Cooper John Kupp. Wolford still, if he's still there.
Maybe. I don't even know if he's there. I don't know. But that's where we have our doubts. And I'm not wishing Matt Stafford ill will.
Right.
And Matt Stafford has been as tough as they come. He's been Philip Rivers-esque in his playing through everything. So I'm not questioning that, but I don't think you can risk a spinal cord contusion. I don't think you can play through that and risk permanent damage with that. So it's not a question of his toughness. It's a question of what's medically proper, expedient, and right to do to a guy. And I just don't see him playing through that if it were to happen. Is it possible he could avoid it? Maybe. We hope so. But we've also talked a lot about their offensive line and the Rams and some of the injury issues there. That's sort of the deal.
Well, we'll get to baseball in a second, but I wanted to ask you, since you brought up Phil Rivers, we could have had a breaking exclusive news about Philip on the podcast probably 2 months ago, 3 months ago, when you told us that they were going to have their 10th kid, and then all of a sudden it blows up on social media last week that they officially announced that they're having their 10th kid, so...
So I saw Philip and Tiffany, I don't know if it was 2 months ago, month, 6 weeks, maybe 2 months, I forget. And they said they were expecting number 10. I was like, oh, congratulations.
Talking about toughness.
You got to understand, we'll get into that. And I'm surprised. So at the social media, I guess it's social media, I should get used to it, grief that he's getting. Oh, my gosh, and 10 kids and nothing. Let me tell you something. So first of all, I made fun of Philip a little bit too. He drives, his family car is a Sprinter van and it fits 12 people.
Yeah.
So I joked with him previously, you got room for one more, you know? And so he said he's having his 10th. And I said, oh, you guys are done. The Sprinter van's full. And he goes, not really. He goes, the older kids drive themselves. I said, we go out to family dinner, you got to fill it up and fill up the minivan or the Sprinter van, and you can't have any friends, right? Because there's no room. And he goes, actually, there's plenty of room because the older kids are old enough where they drive themselves and or their friends. And so I'm not going to be surprised if there's not number 11. Forget number 10. That's the breaking news. But you're right. So one of the monikers that we say about Sports Injury Central is we're all about insider knowledge, not insider information. We're about injury analysis, not injury reporting. This was a casual conversation with a friend. I'm not trying to break news. And I'm not going to say, first of all, I think I'm sensitive enough to know that when people tell you about being pregnant, there's a rollout.
Yeah.
They tell their family, and then they tell their kids and their parents and the close friends, and then it expands just because, you know, you want to make sure everything's all good and whatever. And I don't know when he was ready for public knowledge with that. So I didn't think he was like, and we're not trying to be newsbreakers. We're analysis breakers, insider knowledge, but not insider information. And I wasn't going to ask him, hey, can I tweet that? And can I, like, you know?
That's how you stop getting told stuff.
Yeah, it's not even getting told stuff, you know, just being a friend.
Right.
I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, don't air that out. And
casual conversation is not
casual conversation
for social media consumption, all that.
No, that's the way I look at it. And we're not newsbreakers anyways. It's not, oh, okay, so you broke the news on, first of all, I don't know that we'd ever even get quoted for breaking the news.
Right.
It'd be, the source would confirm it somewhere else and then report, right?
Yeah.
I mean, on its own. But no, that's why I don't feel bad about that. We're not trying to break news and in that way. But the other thing I'd say about Phillip Rivers that people don't understand about the 10 kids is a good number of them are homeschooled.
Wow.
At least they were when they lived in San Diego.
Yeah.
I don't know the current situation down in Panhandle of Florida.
Well, you got the older kids teaching the younger kids now.
A little bit. And part of it is, I remember like on a weekend or a Saturday, there'd be rehab and here comes Phillip Rivers. I remember very distinctly, even early in his career, like he'd bring in like three of his girls, ducks in a row. They're like, you know, march in, single file, quiet, well-behaved.
Yeah.
Sat in the corner, you know, very well-behaved. One took care of the other, but very well-behaved. But also, I remember many a times that Phillip Rivers, now I've got, I'm a girl dad, right? I got the 10 and the 6 now and whatever. But the times when he'd wear flip-flops and he'd be kind of like fidgety. And what are you doing? He goes, well, I'm just trying to hide my toenail polish that the girls put on me, you know? And I was like, okay, I get you. But my point is, when you all asked me before and we talked on the podcast, and then it came up again that Phillip Rivers was willing to play this year. That's what I told you. He's all about football and family, okay? Football and family, not NFL. And right. Family, football and family. Dad was a coach. He's got his football fix coaching the high school. He loves it, yeah. Right? Family. I think family is the reason he's not playing it. Yeah, of course he wants to chase a ring. Who? Right. Why wouldn't he? That's the one thing he's missing. But the issue was when he went to Indy, he brought the whole family. Look, the reason he didn't move from San Diego when the Chargers went to LA is the kids, their friends.
That's a lot of phone calls to schools.
Whatever schools and whatever, yeah. Right? And just uprooting them. So he figured it was easier for him to get a driver, watch film in the back of the customized Sprinter van.
Right.
Go with his quarterback buddy up and back and have someone to talk to and study film with up and back and not uproot his family. Well, when he went to Indy, I wasn't sure if he was going to leave his family in San Diego or move to his ultimate home in Panhandle, Florida. He's from Alabama. And yeah, he moved out of San Diego then when he left the LA Chargers. But the family essentially came with him to Indy. And that's hard, right? So you're coming in July, August, and then come January, you're out again in weather and whatever. And I think that's actually why he retired. I think he still had gas left, but like, what's he doing to his family?
Yeah, he saw the stress it's putting on him, the schedule and all that. So
yeah, and so that's why. And that's why I said, I think Phillip Rivers, maybe even this year, I was going to throw him under the bus. Should I throw him under the bus?
Yeah, why not?
People see him around, so whatever. When I saw him... the joke among the boys was, Phillip, you know, you put on some sympathy weight with Tiffany. And the joke among the boys was, Phillip, you're showing more than Tiffany is right now. But that's just boys being boys, right?
I'm sure there's plenty of opportunity with the kids' snacks in the house and, not finishing meals. Oh, I'll take that. So I can see how that happened.
Phillip, you're still my guy. I'm sorry. Threw you under the bus there. And he was a little sensitive about it. But and anyways, not that he couldn't get in shape. But,
right.
But he's not playing a 17-game NFL season.
That's not his goal.
But let me tell you, when his high school season is done and it's December – late November, December, and there's a key injury in a system that he knows and weapons around him, and that team is playoff bound and going somewhere, I still could see it. That's the formula. He's not trying to sign up with a team now, I don't believe. And before people go reporting this as fact, it's not fact. It's my analysis of the situation, knowing him. He's not telling me that, nor did I even ask him,
right,
what's your goal of playing or this, that, the other. It's just deeper dive, just knowing a guy and how he's built. So I think the rumors can come back again this year, but it's got to be the right circumstance, right? And it's got to be December, right? It's not going to be September, et cetera.
Let's touch on baseball real quick. We got insights up at the website. We're tracking all the daily injuries. I know Tatis turned an ankle, but he should be fine. He pinch hit last night, so expecting to see him back in the lineup soon. One key Astro that's been in and out of the lineup for the thumb, and then now he's got an oblique strain that he had on in batting practice on July 4th. He's on the 10-day IL, Jose Altuve. Astros are always our favorite because they're so tongue-in-cheek with their injury information, but I thought it was funny that Dusty Baker said, oh, he's healing faster than we expected, but he's not going to come off at the minimum 10 days. And then I saw a note that he ran the bases yesterday, so take with that what you will, but that shouldn't be an issue with the oblique.
Yeah, running the bases is not that hard. It's turning, right,
right,
to hit or a
once
pitcher.
He's hitting, then we'll have a real timeline.
Or so. A pitcher, oblique's a big deal. A hitter, oblique's a big deal. But, I mean, we're not trying to make fun of the Astros.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. But I guess you could argue, if you were trying to be facetious, that I think both his injuries were the same, Altuve, weren't they? It was a thumb and oblique. So isn't that upper body?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same injury. But the Astros like to do NHL reporting.
Right.
You know, upper body. But no, I don't know the extent, but yeah, it doesn't surprise me. It's longer than 10, but short of 60, especially since it seems to have been an aggravation. And the other big one is Aaron Judge is still nowhere to be found. And
yeah,
I think we were early on record saying it'd be to the All-Star break, after the All-Star break, at least.
Yeah, I think what we're looking at now is the trade deadline, which is August 1st. So see if he can make it back before then, see what the team does before then to try to bolster the lineup around him. But yeah.
That's above my pay grade, but at this point, it seems like an August return,
right,
for Judge. And once again, why can't he just DH? Because it's his back foot and the turf toe, the way that you get up on the ball of your foot, rotating the back foot, that is the deal. And by the way, Davis's All-Star baseball season finally ended at Super Regional, so I can start with my baseball.
Yeah.
Knowledge, coaching.
When does the next season start? Another month or so?
Oh, he's mad at me. He wants to keep doing some lessons, and then there's fall ball.
Yep.
And I told him no, and he's mad at me. I said, look, you need a break.
Yeah.
Just a mental break, or this break. He's
right.
Been pushing through hard because, you know, he's actually pushed hard for a while. When we do pony, so from Pinto to Mustang, he was really excited about it. So pitching, first time pitching,
yeah,
took lessons. He kind of went close to year round. And Mustang year one to Mustang year two, he kind of pushed through basically with fall ball and year round. I'm like, no, you need to take a break. I said, we'll talk about fall ball, but at least 1 month. And he actually just starts today for junior lifeguard. And you've ever been in
the
West Coast? I mean, that's a brutal 1 month program.
Yeah.
It's tiring. He's going to be wiped out anyways. But look, for me to tell parents, you know, switch sports and let's not be so sport specific. Now, Davis would argue he went from being shortstop to being an outfielder, because in All-Stars, you have 9 shortstops. So yeah, Someone's got to play the other positions. So he actually learned to be a pretty good little outfielder. But he's saying, well, I haven't pitched a lot recently. Well, okay, but just take a month break,
yeah,
and refresh, and guess what? You'll miss it more. I mean, kind of thing. He's driving it.
No, that's good. You don't want him being like, oh, another practice. Yeah.
In case anyone asks, Taylor's on the IL, I guess. Is it 10 day or 60 day?
He's always 10 day. He'll always say 10 day. He'll always say he doesn't need an IL. So, but he'll be back next week. We'll have a full breakdown of your Scott Fish draft. I think we've only progressed a couple rounds since we talked last week.
Yeah, I just looked. Mike Williams just missed. So just people know, well, pick 9.3, I took Kadarius Toney to prove that we don't believe in injury prone.
Right.
I mean,
a lot of people expect him to pull a hamstring just getting off the couch. So hopefully that doesn't follow him to Kansas City from New York Giants, because I know that sapped a lot of his value.
I think my draft strategy changed a little bit this year. And I'll credit Adam Azer, our CBS Fantasy Football guest last week's podcast. I've done pretty well, luckily, beginner's luck in Scott Fishbowl, in making the playoffs, 3-for-3.
Right.
Now that I said that, this is going to be a miss. Knock on wood. But I really haven't won in the playoffs, other than the winning the division bye week. You know, I really haven't won in the playoffs. And I don't know how to fantasy draft, but I think I was just drafting for, I guess in my mind, making the playoffs. Now I'm trying to break the mold and not be the Marty Schottenheimer of, you know, I'm trying to win a playoff game. So
yeah.
Tony's one of those, I think,
yeah,
could be higher ceiling guys. Might be a lower floor.
as long as he's healthy weeks 14 through 17, right? That's
Well, I need him to have a good season too, because yeah. He's starting right now and to get to the playoffs. So I do think I've drafted a little bit differently this year, looking at some higher upside guys.
Yeah.
Like even Deshaun Watson, we talked about. That's higher upside and maybe lower floor than some. But anyways, we'll talk about all of that.
No, that's why I've had fun experimenting with the best ball style draft that Underdog does, because you can take a flyer on guys like that. And oh, if Tony doesn't work out, then someone else will slot in to that lineup that week or whatever it is. So you don't have to get burned by your lineup decisions too much.
Yeah. And I've been playing with Underdog and the sleeper stuff, and you guys should go and sign up code SIC, Sports Injury Central, SIC, and get the $100 match, etc. You guys have put out some good content. And every time there's like a, I don't know if it's a free pick or reduced.
Yeah, it's like a promo.
A promo pick, mm-hmm, where instead of the 7.5 strikeouts, it's at 0.5 or 2.5 strikeouts, yeah, or something. You all have been like 50% on those prop parlays, because you get that free one, then you pick two more, one, two, or three more, and you get some really pretty good value. That's been good when I've tailed those with you guys. And it's actually kind of fun. I'm getting ready for NFL season, where the prop picks and parlays will be all over the place. And that'll be fun. So check that out on the site, as well as the preseason injury preview coming. Thanks to Joe Thomas again for the Hall of Famer on his way into Canton, spending some time with us there. And I think you can tell, I don't think I'm on the list to go.
I wouldn't hold your breath too much.
No. Been there, done that. Fun times if you guys haven't gone. I think it's kind of a cool deal. But yeah, no. No Hall of Fame for me. All right. Thanks for watching and listening. Tell a friend and give us a nice little 5-star rating if you can. We appreciate you guys.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.